Continuing on with our journey through some of Jesus's encounters as he walks towards the cross. And in this passage today out of Luke chapter 12, we meet Jesus as he gets really caught or sucked into a sibling rivalry. Right, Jesus is just walking along and a younger brother, and we know he's a younger brother because he doesn't have control of the inheritance. He walks up to Jesus and says, "Lord, tell my brother to give me my share of the inheritance. Split it with me." Now, you got to understand something. Back in the ancient world, when an inheritance was given, you're talking about land, farming land, right? It was considered rather typical, if not preferred, for the people who inherit the land to govern it together so that you bigger plot, bigger yield, that's the kind of thing, instead of splitting it all up. But this younger brother wanted to be a little bit independent, and so he's asking Jesus, "I want what's mine. Tell my brother to give me what's mine." He wants that type of independence from his family. Now, Jesus has this interesting response, right? "Who made me judge or arbiter over you?" Which is a really funny response, because in that time, in that day and age, the rabbis would have been the ones who actually made that decision. If you had a dispute about an inheritance, the go-to guy was a rabbi. They were the ones who, they understood how the law worked, they understood how interpersonal relationships worked under the law, and so that was who you went to when you had a dispute over something like this. So here's a question. Well, why does Jesus say, "Well, who made me judge in this situation?" Why does he make that statement? And that's a really perplexing attitude. It's very non-typical for a rabbi in that era. I have a feeling what's going on is that Jesus is a little, you get the feeling he's a little bit annoyed. He's a human being. He's allowed to do that. And he's a little bit annoyed because this guy's trying to suck him into something that is way off mission. Jesus has come into the world to redeem creation from the powers of sin and death. He's come and gone, come to go to the cross in order to accomplish that mission. And so here he has his brother who shows up and is asking him to divide land when Jesus' entire mission is to bring all of creation together under the kingdom of God. And what this man is asking for is not to have what's his so that he can live as a human being, but he's asking to have what is his in order to sever a familiar relationship for selfish ends. And he's annoyed by this. Like, why on earth would you want come to me with this? This is the opposite of what I'm about. And you can say, yes, Jesus talked about who is my father, my brother, my all the people with me, and he divides himself from his family. But that's, anytime he encourages someone to do that, is to become part of that larger story of redeeming all of creation. And so he's a little annoyed, but this guy is willing to break from his brother for something as selfish just to have his own plot of land. In fact, he calls it greed. And so he actually has something to say about the nature of greed. And he says that to his disciples and to this man who comes to him. He has a little pithy statement to make, and then he has one of his favorite tools ever is to teach a parable. And one of the things that he says right off the bat is you have to watch out for greed. Because a person's life does not depend upon the amount or the type of possessions they can acquire through life. In fact, when we are greedy, and we read in the New Testament reading, put aside greed, it's a form of idolatry. Isn't that an interesting statement? When we are greedy, when we covet the possession of new possessions or to accumulate new goods, it does terrible things to our souls. If you've ever read The Lord of the Rings or seen the movies, Gollum is this incredible example of what greed can do to us. The addiction to a possession can twist your soul when you are not even aware of it's going on. And that's exactly what happens to Gollum. You know anything about the story? He's a cute little hobbit type thing, and he ends up as being this slimy creature, lives under a mountain, all because of greed and what that does to his heart. And so for our culture, that's an important thing to wrestle with, because we're the ones who came up with the wonderful little mantra, the one who dies with the most toys Right, but that's a lie. The one who dies with the most toys dies and leaves toys behind, right? You can't take it with you. And that's what happens. And it hits us where we least expect it. And I'm dealing with this now because with this car that we just had to lease, because our car was totaled while we were standing still, which I still can't quite get over. But so we have this new car. I'm not bragging about a new car, I'm being confession here. But this is the whole thing. I had never had a new car because I don't care about cars. If my car can get me from point A to point B in a reliable manner and has air conditioning, I'm happy, right? That's all I care about. If it's got an okay stereo, that's a plus, but I don't really need it because I'll just look at the scenery as I go by and narrowly miss other people. But anyway, so that's the thing. So I've never had a new car, so I've never had to worry about like where I park or who parks near me or who spills what in the car. I haven't had to worry about the acorns falling off the trees and scratching the paint because it's a car, it's a tool. It gets me from point A to point B. Now I have this shiny new thing, and oh my gosh, Gollum is coming out. It's my precious. So now like I go into a parking lot and I am terrified that someone is gonna park next to me. And we had ice cream in the car the other day, and I was freaking out about, like, oh my gosh, you're going to ruin the interior. I don't know what's going to happen. And our garage door opener is temporarily down, so we leave the car out front. And I'm going, fall's coming, and the acorns are going to fall. And Jen yesterday, someone splashed something onto the windshield while she was driving. Jen said, I want you to come and look at the windshield with me. And my response was, oh my gosh, what did you do to the windshield? Like, I don't like this. This is not me. Like, I don't care about, like, the car. All it needs, I have to get to point B, and suddenly I'm terrified of all these things that I have never had to worry about. That's greed. That's forcing its way out to the surface in a point where I would have never had expected it. And so this is what Jesus is telling his disciples to be worried about. You have to be careful with this. You have to be careful with how you treat and how you embrace the possessions and the wealth that God has given you. It's very important. And in order to continue along that teaching, Jesus tells a parable, his favorite thing, in which we meet a rich man. Now, he's a rich guy. That's the only designation that we have. He's already rich. But he's so rich that he has a big plot of land and he gets this bumper crop that's so big, even he can't store it. And his reaction is a reminder to all of us that a lot of times when we are blessed, we have a tendency to miss the purpose of our blessing. And that's exactly what this man does. He has a struggle. He has a decision that he has to make. He's sleepy. It's okay. But he has a decision that he has to make. What am I going to do with all this excess food that I can't store? And he says, aha, I know what I'll do. I'm going to tear down all of my current storehouses and I'm going to build bigger storehouses and I'm going to put all the food in there and then I'm going to be able to eat, drink, and be merry for many years without any problem whatsoever. I'm just going to live at the Jersey Shore minus the hurricanes for the rest of my life, right? That's what I'm going to do. And this is his plan. And according to the understanding of our world, we think this guy's got it going on. He's set. He's done. That's, of course, what you're supposed to do when you have a lot of excess. Sit back, take it easy, and live for yourself the rest of your life. Jesus, in the context of this passage, sees this as greed. Because he never, ever considers that he might be able to give the excess off as a gift. And you notice, this man is not even mentioned a family in this parable. He really lives for himself. This is like Jesus is trying to highlight. It would be really unusual not to have a family in his day, right? He lives for himself. He doesn't consider what it would be to give out that excess as something else. And remember, he's already rich. Yet now he can live unease, and that's his whole idea. I can live for myself and be in pleasure and not worry about the troubles of the world anymore. Our culture says that's wise. At least if you watch like ING commercials, they really think that's wise, right? So that's the idea. God in the parable looks at what this man does and he says, you are a fool. You're a fool. When you think, well, why does Jesus call him a, or God call him a fool? guy's just trying to take care of himself, right? Why is he calling him a fool? And he says, this very night, your life is going to be demanded from you. And this is a very Jewish idea, where the idea that life was on loan from God, and that one day, for all people who live, God is going to call the marker. He's going to call or demand our lives back from us because it's on loan from God. It's a very, I think that's a kind of a neat idea. That's a very Jewish concept. And so that's this man's going to happen. He's going to have his life called back. And all the things that he had done, all the accomplishments that he made, all the things that he had stored for himself so that he would be set for years and years and years and years and years were going to come to nothing. He would never get to enjoy them. He would never be able to see them. He would never be able to relax in that. And literally, the only legacy he'd leave behind was his selfishness. The only thing he was going to leave behind was his greed, because those large storehouses with all the food he would never get to eat were going to be left in his wake. He who dies with the most toys leaves a bunch of toys behind, right? And this is a cultural lesson we need to wrestle with. Because the link between wealth and the accumulation of possessions and our sense of well-being is literally the air we breathe. That is our culture. And it gets into us in ways we would not quite be prepared for or even aware of. Greed is sneaky. It's like Gollum crawling around on the cliff face. It hit me for something I didn't even care. I don't even like cars. I don't even want a car. I really don't. But yet I have this new thing, and I'm like, ooh, shiny, right? It hits us where we don't expect this. And this is not to say that we are a bunch of terrible, horrible people, and we're awful folks, and we don't use our stuff right. And this is, I don't take guilt from other Christians, and if I ever start preaching guilt to all of you, tell me to go take a vacation for a month or so, because that's not the way I want us to embrace the faith. But we do need to be aware of this and wrestle with this reality so that we can live better for Christ and in his will. Jesus interprets this parable rather interestingly. He says, you know, this is the fate of everyone who stores up treasures for themselves but is not rich towards God. And of course, the takeaway for that is that you're supposed to be rich towards, let me try that again. Your takeaway from that is you're supposed to be rich towards, that was a little better. Anyway, so, but that's the takeaway. And of course, if I was a really good pastor, I'd be like, so all of you need to tithe more. You know, it's like, that would be, and give more to the church, and that's what you need to do. And I'm a terrible pastor, so I really don't care about that. It's a wonderful thing if you would like to support this ministry. I think that if you're covenanted, you should, but that's another thing. I think the best way to respond to this parable that Jesus teaches and to embrace that takeaway that he gives is simply a prayer request. Lord, would you teach me to use the resources you've given me? The time and talents and treasures, so that I can be a blessing in this world, and in so doing, be a beacon for your kingdom and for the good news that you've given through Jesus. It's a prayer request. Use what I have so that I can in some way glorify you. A great prayer, right? That's what being rich towards God means. It means recognizing in our life and in our deeds and in our actions and the way that we walk and interact with other people, that we realize that literally everything we've been given is on a blessed loan from God, who loves us, who wants us to cherish what he's given and then give it away to others. Because here's the wonderful thing. In living out that prayer request, and the more that we walk in it, and again, you're looking with me with the car, I have to learn this as much as anybody else, but as much as we live in that prayer request and embrace it, allow the Spirit to flow through us in that, it's neat because we're living for others and that sense of greed gets slowly choked out of our lives. Because we begin to encounter Jesus in that act of giving away. We begin to encounter Jesus in that act of loving other people, of letting go of the things we have so that they can be used for the glory of God. So pray that prayer. Live that prayer. The resources you have been given, all of them, in some way, somehow, can be used that God might get the glory. And wonderful things will occur. Amen.